Good day and welcome to this week's episode of Strictly Legal on WESN Content Capital. I am your host, Rondell Donohue, attorney at law, and once again, I'm happy to bring the law and you. Of course, you can stream us on WESNCC and all social media platforms. Now, of course, on Monday, the 4th of October, 2021, the Honourable Colm Imbert, Minister of Finance, presented the budget for fiscal year 2021-2022. Now, of course, you want to know why are we speaking about the budget on Strictly Legal? Because it is part of what you call the appropriation bill, which is a legal bill. And the national budget is basically an annual projection of the monies that the government plans to spend and the source of funding of those spending, and of course what the money will be done or what the money will be spent on. Now section 113 of the Constitution grants legal authority to the Minister of Finance to table, as I said, the appropriation bill, which is the draft law, as well as the to present the expenditures and the revenues with respect to same. Now, upon completion of the budget debate, the appropriation bill must receive parliamentary approval like any other bill. And once it's approved, the appropriation bill is forwarded to the president for assent, and it then becomes law with respect to the fiscal year. Now, of course, in studio, I have a guest, a very special guest. His name is the Honorable Brian Manning, Member of Parliament for San Fernando East and Minister in the Ministry of Finance, who will give us an overview of the budget presentation which was tabled in Parliament on Monday. Now, a bit about Mr. Manning. He was appointed as the Minister in the Ministry of Finance on August 19th, 2020, and Mr. Manning is a former small medium enterprise financing officer at the IADB in Washington, that is the Inter-American Development Bank. And of course, during his tenure there, he was funding SMEs in Central America and the Caribbean. He's also a former equity analyst at the University of Maryland, Robert H. Smith School Global Equity Fund, where he was responsible for conducting analysis of international equity, finance, fixed income securities, and managing diversified portfolios of equities and bonds. Of course, Mr. Manning has a wide range of knowledge, and he brings a wealth of experience, where he has graduate degrees in finance, asset management, international business, and marketing. So he's well qualified. And Mr. Manning is also certified in advanced business Spanish. Wow, that's impressive. Written and conversational from the Venezuelan embassy. And he is a Trinidad and Tobago and former president of the Trinidad and Tobago Basketball Federation. And of course, he has just released a parang tune, so I'm sure he may sing. I'm not sure if we will have time, but we may probably ask him to sing a verse. So good morning, Mr. Manning.
Good morning, Grondel. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me. You know, my agent has advised me that I no longer sing for free.
Oh, you no longer sing for free, of course. But of course, you know, Strictly Legal, it's a good way to promote yourself, you know. So how have you been?
Thank you for having me. Very good. You know, it's been quite a few busy days leading up to the budget presentation. Of course, afterwards, you have to, of course, come on these shows and speak to the public and advise them and let them know exactly what the content was. It was a pretty long budget, almost 4 hours long.
Yes,
so I'm sure everyone did not sit around and listen to the entire budget. So we have to share the highlights with the national community so that everyone can realize that there's something in the budget for them.
And of course, the theme of this budget, this is the second year of presenting a budget within the pandemic.
Yes.
And the theme is resilience in the face of a global pandemic. Now, before we start on the budget, tell us, how has been your experience so far as a minister in the Ministry of Finance?
What I think a lot of people don't realize, and what I didn't realize, is just how much law is involved in the Ministry of Finance. Very legislative. You have to deal with procurement, legislation, property tax legislation. It's all legislative. So I have actually had to come up to speed on the laws of Trinidad and Tobago in certain cases to be effective at the job. And that is one thing I have to commend Minister Imbert on, is his wealth of knowledge and education in almost every aspect.
And this is his seventh year
yes,
as a minister, and of course being an engineer,
he's qualified in various fields.
Yes.
Right? And Minister Imbert, the Ministry of Finance is expansive. So you expect people to have general knowledge of almost everything going on in the Ministry of Finance. Minister Imbert has in-depth knowledge of everything that is going on in the Ministry of Finance. So I've learned a lot from him in terms of how to be effective in that role or in any ministerial role, and I would like to publicly thank him for all of the guidance that he has given me so far, and also for presenting a budget that I believe is one that really puts Trinidad and Tobago on the path to development while also protecting the most vulnerable persons in our society.
Now, as you said, the budget was a very lengthy budget, and you know a lot of commentators, I guess, were hoping on doom and gloom.
Yes, asking for austerity. Right?
Austerity, yeah. But of course, how do you balance austerity measures versus trying to deal with, you know, just ensuring that everyone gets a piece of the pie?
And that's a difficult balancing act that we have in the Ministry of Finance. The economy is heavily dependent on fiscal measures, which is government expenditure. The government cannot afford to cut too much spending out of the economy, or it would have severe economic and social effects on our society, and we are very mindful of that. We continued spending in key areas, especially the areas that would improve the revenue generating capacity of our country, and that is to really make ourselves more attractive for foreign direct investment and also for the growth of our economy and creating jobs. Unfortunately, we had to continue along the lines of having a deficit budget. We were on track to eliminate deficit budgets in Trinidad and Tobago by the year 2022, but of course we were interrupted by COVID. So now the goal is to end deficit budgets by the year 2024.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, the deficit is around
$9 billion. Yes.
And would you say that this is the least expenditure budget of this particular period? And it's like $43 billion.
It's about the revenue is about 43. Expenditures is in the region of $51-52 billion.
So it's still quite a lot.
So we have, remember, under the previous UNC administration, budgets had reached a level of $63-64 billion per year.
Yeah.
We had to cut back on some of that expenditure, but we didn't want to cut to the point till we hit bone. Right, you have to cut while still preserving the economy and preserving livelihoods and economic activity in Trinidad and Tobago, and that's the balancing act that we have to strike in this economy.
Now, in terms of how the budgets are done, now tell us what are the workings and how monies are allocated to various ministries and statutory bodies.
Well, we have three working documents that we use to really guide our national development. And I would advise anyone who's interested in what the plan is and the strategy for going forward that they refer to those documents. One of them is the Vision 2030 plan. It is online. I believe if you look at the Ministry of Planning's website, it's there. There's also the Roadmap Committee Reports 1 and 2. So those are the three documents that we really refer to when it comes to deciding which projects that we are going to fund going forward and which ones have prominence. As you can see, education received a large chunk of the national spending this year.
And including Ministry of Health, and which is in the $5 billion bracket. Yes. Social development, etc.
Correct. Of course, social development is going to be one that is extremely well-funded because we're still trying to assist the vulnerable in Trinidad and Tobago coming out of this COVID crisis. We spend a lot on education because we want to develop more of a knowledge-based economy in Trinidad and Tobago. We cannot continue along the lines of being focused strictly on energy economy. It's about diversification, and it's very difficult to diversify our economy without having a well-qualified, educated workforce. It also makes us a lot more attractive for foreign direct investment. So we recognize that, and we put the largest aspect of our budget into education.
But then we know we talk about allocation, we talk about the largest number of allocation. Yes. However, is it trickling down, or will it trickle down to, let's say, the average man on the street?
Yes.
Because a lot of persons think, okay, a budget doesn't really affect me. What is the purpose of the budget?
It's not really, I don't know how anyone can say the budget doesn't affect them. And there isn't really any such thing as trickle-down economics. I think that's been proven to be ineffective. What we are doing is helping people to lift themselves up. And the number one way of upward mobility in almost any society is access to education. And that's why education has always been extremely important, and it's one of the pillars of the People's National Movement or any PNM government that has been in office.
Now, on the topic of, again, allocation. Now, I recall that Duma would have commented on the fact that Ministry of Rural Development was given quite a low allocation of $2.something billion,
yes,
which is less than what the Tobago House of Assembly has been allocated.
Right.
Now, one may say, well, this sounds like an election budget.
Yes.
And why is it that Tobago, having a smaller population or mass, why is it that they are getting so much more than local government that is are the first responders, and they are needed in order to do certain things that are relevant to each locality. 14 municipal corporations, I think, in Trinidad.
But this is not an election budget. It's a growth and development budget. It's really paving the economic road for Trinidad and Tobago out of this COVID crisis. You have to also remember that because an allocation goes to a certain ministry, it doesn't mean that some of the responsibilities aren't funding to other ministries. For example, Tobago, I believe, got 4.5% of the national budget. Yeah. And some were complaining that, well, in the Tobago autonomy bills, they promised 6.7, 6.9% of the national budget. But what is allocated to the THA is not the only funds that's going to be spent in Tobago. The various ministries also have Tobago projects. Also, there's an opportunity for Tobago to raise a bond for several, I think, hundreds of millions of dollars to inject into capital projects in Tobago. So because the allocation may be a certain number, doesn't mean that that is entirely the amount that's going to be spent on the responsibilities in that area. They may have been diversified into other areas which fall under other ministries.
Now, I mean, speaking about diversification, so many times we talk about diversification of the economy, but yet we always mention, or we always stick to the point that we are dependent on the oil and gas production.
Yes.
Right? I mean, what is diversification to the layman? Because sometimes you hear it and we want to know what it is.
Yeah, we've been having that discussion for how many decades
in Trinidad and Tobago. Yes.
One point I'd like to make to people of Trinidad and Tobago is that in international trade, to be successful at it, especially in a globalized economy like the one we exist in, it depends on competitive advantage. I couldn't sell a product in the international market at a higher price and lower quality than someone else in our area or in our hemisphere is doing at the same time. Okay? It's competitive. So we have to stick to the areas to really have the most bang for our buck, to generate the highest revenues, to create the most jobs. Stick to the areas where we have the most or best competitive advantages. The energy sector is clearly an area where we have competitive advantage because we have access to oil and gas in Trinidad and Tobago. Our industry is over 100 years old. We have competitive advantage. And that's why it's been so easy for us to depend on that sector.
But can you say that the 60, I think it's a 60-something dollars per barrel, at the projection, sorry.
Yes.
Is that too high? Would you say that is too high?
It's actually quite conservative, to be honest. What's going on now in the global energy industry is that we have some structural supply chain issues. And those supply chain issues are going to be difficult to overcome in the short term. If you've been paying attention, you'll see that oil and gas prices have really vaulted in the past few weeks. And that's because there's been huge demand now that countries are coming out of the COVID crisis. China has ramped up their activity, so there's huge demand there, but there's also less supply because some of the dirtier fossil fuels have been removed from the market over the past few years, such as coal. So now that coal is gone, but there's a higher demand for energy, that puts a lot of pressure on natural gas and oil because there's higher demand for those products, but the supply is well below the demand.
But
so
therefore,
that has pushed prices up.
Well, therefore, that brings the point of the diversification in order to ensure that your economy is stable. I mean, one source is renewable energy, right? That I've heard that we spoke about. But when are legislation going to come into place to deal with streamlining that frame of or source of energy?
Well, we are part of the Paris Accord, which requires us to really decrease our carbon emissions by a certain amount every year going forward. We do have projects in terms of solar energy. We're building the largest solar park in the entire region with 150 megawatts of power when it's done, and that will be added to the national grid. So we won't have to use as much natural gas to produce energy to fuel our economy. So that's one. There's also a discussion about building a green hydrogen plant in Trinidad and Tobago. So we are becoming more green. The minister has removed taxes on electric vehicles and the importation of
those vehicles.
Yeah,
that is something I was going to raise as well.
Yeah, so we are gradually moving our economy to become more green and to really keep our agreements with the Paris Accord.
But that also includes the landfill as well, sort of changing that to incorporate recycling, particularly among everyone.
That is a project that I'm extremely passionate about. One, I think there's an opportunity for us to become a regional leader in recycling. One, it can also be used to create energy. There's waste-to-energy projects. Recycled material can be used for vast number of things, for road paving, building benches. There are so many opportunities when it comes to recycled iron, steel, plastics, and so on. We have had some challenges in that regard because, of course, it falls under public utilities and there's a restructuring going on within that ministry. But I expect that we are going to see some developments in that area going forward, because I know the Minister of Public Utilities has been working extremely hard, and he is a guy with vision, and he will get it done.
Mr. Manning, let us take a break. You're watching Strictly Legal. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. And we're back with the Honorable Brian Manning, Minister in the Ministry of Finance and Member of Parliament for San Fernando East. We are speaking about the budget. Now, before the break, Mr. Manning, we're speaking about renewable energy. But I want to move directly to some of the fiscal measures.
Sure.
So let's start with property tax. I know that is a topic that has been on the minds and hearts of many persons.
Yes.
I don't know if it's a possibility that you could explain what is property tax and how is it the government plans to roll out. Because what I notice is a lot of persons are now saying, ask the tax once again. I don't know if the society is expecting not to pay tax. But yeah. I think the most important thing they're looking at is we don't mind paying tax, but let's get better services.
Yes. And that's the whole point. That's the whole point of the property tax. It's supposed to underpin local government reform. Right, and I tell people, if it weren't for some of these services being paid for by your property taxes, you could not enjoy the use of your property. I mean, something as simple as spraying for mosquitoes. If your local government didn't spray for mosquitoes, I guarantee you could not live in your home. Right, fire services, police, roads, drainage. All of that is paid for by local government.
Well, you know, the roads are something that, you know, we have issues with.
And that's the whole point.
Digs up.
And that's the whole point. If the funds that are raised within the community are going to be used in that community. But that requires, one, that you have funds in the first place. And that is what local government reform is underpinned by. The revenues generated by the property tax and other revenues in that constituency. So one is supported by the other. Also, I would say to the national population that the average homeowner in Trinidad and Tobago has nothing to worry about. I heard one trade union leader saying that there should be a wealth tax and not a property tax. I would like to inform this gentleman
that
the property tax is a wealth tax.
Yeah.
The average homeowner in Trinidad and Tobago who lives in a modest single family unit has nothing to worry about the property tax. Of course, if you live in a luxurious, huge home that can attract massive rental income, you would have to pay more than the average homeowner. If you own 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 properties, clearly you would pay more than someone who owns one. If you own huge commercial land holdings, you would have to pay more.
Yeah.
So the property tax is a wealth tax. And I think there's been a lot of anxiety over nothing. And the Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance have publicly stated that there will be a re-implementation of the property tax, but neither has said the day or the hour. And they certainly didn't say no. At some point it will be, but that's not going to happen right now.
Well, of course, you know, the issue is that, you know, it's important to articulate, and this is where communications come in. You know, because there are a number of persons for against.
Yes.
So it's how well the government communicates to ensure that persons don't feel anxiety.
We had a valuation exercise. That's all it was. It was a property valuation exercise. And some people decided to run with it, saying that the property tax were being re-implemented right now.
So what is the timeline for the implementation of property tax?
No one knows the day or the hour.
So that means they can just come upon citizens without...
Not at all. Of course, it wouldn't happen. That's what I mean. It won't happen that way. Of course, persons will be informed. The legislation would have to be passed and so on. And it will be that you have to pay property taxes. Where in the developed world do people not pay property taxes? That cannot continue.
And of course, it is noteworthy to state that I know the Minister of Finance stated that at one point you needed a 3/5 majority. Three-fifths.
Yes.
And now they are trying to amend legislation to...
For various pieces of legislation.
Yes, for a simple majority.
Yeah.
Would they not say that could be... Well, not unconstitutional, but it can be
Not at all. And... It's not the same bill. If you're trying to force through the same bill, which required a majority, for one that required a simple majority, then you could say something like that. But the bill has been reformed as to not impugn our constitution in any way, and that's why we've been able to pass these reform bills with a simple majority. What I also would like to remind Trinbagonians is that if everyone pays their fair share in taxes, it lightens the load for everyone. And that's really one of the purposes of the TTRA legislation, in that people who have been escaping the tax net or haven't been paying their fair share, and also to improve the efficiency in terms of paying taxes and collecting those revenues. That's what the TTRA is about. And just a simple matter, like we had the gaming bill. That was brought into effect earlier on this year. We expect...
Because I remember that's something that even your late father would have tried to
absolutely
implement years ago.
It was a completely unregulated, unfettered industry for a long time. From that one bill alone, we expect to generate about $500 million annually from taxes, tax revenues. And that's what I mean. If people pay their fair share, then it means a lighter load for everyone in the future. And that's what we are seeking to do.
Now, as we on tax reduction for significant exporters of local goods. Now, I know the Honorable
Correct.
Minister announced he intends to provide a full suite of measures to provide relief from the impact of COVID-19.
Yes.
And such first measure announces a reduction of tax rate by 5% for significant exporters of local goods. Now, what's the meaning of significant... What constitutes a significant exporter
of local
goods?
In terms of your total revenues, the proportion of, if a significant proportion of that, a vast majority, I don't think is the actual.
I think they said something that in excess of 500,000.
Right. So we wanted to really benefit businesses that, one, added foreign exchange to our economy, exporters. You want to promote more persons getting involved in the export markets. Also, there were tax breaks for SMEs, small medium enterprises.
Yeah.
So we want to, you know. So I said we have a targeted program where we want to benefit businesses that are benefiting our economy, and exporters would be one. Also, small and medium enterprises. We want to give those businesses an opportunity to, one, develop themselves, also to attract funding, also to employ our people. So that was one of the focuses of our plan, and it's one of the aspects of diversification.
And of course, we go to the digital sector. There was another proposal that limited tax exemptions for new companies whose core businesses activities are digitization and technological solutions. Now, explain exactly why are we giving tax exemptions, and what do we hope to achieve by, I mean, yes, we have to digitalize, but how are we going to do it? And what is the ministry's also provisions? Because I noticed that we have a Ministry of Digital Transformation.
Yes.
Which the allocation has been quite low. So therefore, how do we streamline digitization?
Yes. Well, there was a consideration of placing all of the funding required for digitization in that ministry, but
yeah,
it was decided eventually to make that part of the allocation in each individual ministry. So the actual allocation is not as low when you consider that that is what the thinking was.
Understood.
That ministry is supposed to give people of Trinidad and Tobago better access to government services online, primarily. One of the initiatives is to have a national Wi-Fi program. Of course, it's not going to be super high-speed Wi-Fi, right? You have to run all your videos and whatever else on it, but it's going to be significant Wi-Fi to allow persons, no matter where you live in Trinidad and Tobago, to be able to access government services. That's a big part of what it is you want to do. Improve connectivity.
And I know that COVID has been a blessing for such thing as digitization.
If there's one benefit that has come out of COVID, it's that more of our business people
Correct.
Have developed online opportunities and aspects to their business, and have now come to appreciate a lot more how important digitization and online business is in Trinidad and Tobago.
So therefore, are we saying that these businesses will now be given tax break if they assist the government in terms of promotion and innovation of their services or recruitment?
I'm not familiar with that aspect of the budget. I didn't hear that part. But I know that we are benefiting businesses that are, one, heavily involved in technology, because we are in the technology revolution globally, and we have to become more of a digitized society. Our goal is to become really the Estonia of the Caribbean. So we must promote tech usage and also tech education in every aspect that we can, and that's what we were thinking when we gave all of these tax breaks to tech-based and also research and development-based businesses.
But then we could also say that other Caribbean countries, to me, like Barbados, they seem to be far ahead in terms of in terms of their technology for a small country that has, I mean, that most of their revenue comes from tourism.
Yes, and well, that's the difficult part. We are fortunate in that our revenues don't primarily come from tourism and agriculture. Those are good industries to support our economy. But if you look at our CARICOM neighbors, some of them are some of the most indebted countries in the hemisphere. We are very fortunate that we don't primarily depend on those industries, but they supplement our main industry. So that's been very fortunate for us. So we have the resources. We have an HSF with almost $6 billion US dollars in it. We have foreign reserves, almost $7 billion.
Now, as we speak about the HSF, I know there has been a withdrawing of that fund.
Yes.
Could you explain, okay, what is the government's projection in terms of further withdrawals?
Yes, there will be further withdrawals, but we have had a very, what would I say, conservative strategy when it comes to the HSF. There is as much funding in the HSF right now as this government met when they came into office.
And for those who don't know, that's the Health and Stabilization Fund.
Yes. But let me make the point. Yeah. Right? The assets under management in HSF right now are around the same, if not a little bit higher, than what this government met when they came into office in 2015. So we have the assets in the HSF have been invested in the international markets and stocks and bonds. So we've essentially been spending the returns from those investments, not the actual principal. So we have not, you know, raided the HSF or any of this other craziness some economic commentators have been stating in the public domain. We have been very judiciously using the funds there to really support and benefit the people of Trinidad and Tobago during this COVID crisis, and to also focus on our national development goals.
But what about, I mean, all these tax cuts and incentives are great in terms of businesses, SMEs, exports, but then we have an issue with the foreign reserve, right? So, I mean, we already have an issue now where businesses are closing down because of the fact that they cannot get enough foreign reserve to run their business.
But
so how do we...
Exchange.
Thanks for the correction. For exchange.
Yes.
So therefore, how can we now stimulate, right, the reserve, right, that's the correct terminology, to engage better foreign exchange and better business habits?
The main supplier of our foreign exchange in Trinidad and Tobago would be the energy sector. But unfortunately, our demand for foreign exchange greatly outstrips supply, especially when there's a shortfall in energy revenues. So we have been really preferring businesses that generate foreign exchange. Our manufacturing sector has had access to foreign exchange. Businesses that are involved in export have also had access to foreign exchange. And then for some of the other businesses that are mainly consumers of foreign exchange, they would have had challenges in terms of accessing as much as they would like, because that would have been irresponsible. We couldn't allow that, because then we would have had to devalue our currency, and then that would have increased the cost of living for everyone in Trinidad and Tobago, because so much of what we consume is imported. So we were very careful about that, very careful in the way we allocate foreign exchange, because we want to really manage our exchange rate to really preserve and minimize the cost of living for Trinbagonians going forward.
But then we are minimizing the cost of living. However, now because businesses are closed, now we have jobs being, people are now unemployed. Yes. So there's a ripple effect on the economy.
There's really a changing, a reform of our economy. The two largest consumers of foreign exchange in Trinidad and Tobago are, one, food, about $1 billion a year in imported food, if you could believe that, and also imported cars. So it couldn't continue in a situation where those two industries had unfettered access to foreign exchange.
What is surprising, though, is that the cars are selling, regardless of the economy, are selling.
And we had to restrict some of the foreign exchange in various industries that did not generate foreign exchange. We already have a traffic problem in Trinidad and Tobago. And I tell Trinbagonians, we seem to be a people who like to have things both ways, but life doesn't work that way, okay? You can't want to have cheap fuel, cheap cars, and no traffic. Those things don't go together, right? You have cheap fuel and cheap cars, you're going to congest your roads with cars. So we removed some of the subsidies on fuel. There's a restriction. Remove some of the tax exemptions on imported vehicles. And we are hoping to benefit from that in terms of, one, reduce the number of cars on the road in Trinidad and Tobago, and also reduce the pollution that's caused by all of the motor vehicles.
But then with the tax incentive for the electric vehicles.
Electric vehicles, of then course. Because they're a lot cleaner, they're a lot greener. But right now, the technology, electric vehicles can be expensive in some areas. So I don't think you're going to see our streets flooded with electric vehicles very soon, but in time to come, as we move, of course, to meet our agreements with the Paris Accord, you're going to see more and more gradually electric vehicles are going to become more commercialized. It's going to become more democratized. The prices are going to fall, and you're going to see more and more electric vehicles in our streets going forward.
So, man, let's take a pin. We have to take this break. Sure. We'll be right back. You're watching Strictly Legal with the Honorable Brian Manning. And we're back on Strictly Legal, speaking about the overview of the budget with Brian Manning, Minister in the Ministry of Finance. Now, Mr. Manning, the hot topic, VAT on basic food items. I know that effective 1st of November, the list of basic food items that are zero rated for VAT will be expanded to include biscuit, cooking oil, cricks.
Don't forget curry.
Yeah, curry and all these different things, pigtail, and then people were like, pigtail, you know, pigtail can't fool me, and all these different things. And then the ministry had to issue a press release, I think it was yesterday, to clarify what exactly is meant by the zero rated, because I think it was, curry is already
it's already on the zero rated list.
Yeah, so just explain to me what is the thinking behind this reduction.
Of course, the minister could not have announced the full list during the budget debate, or it would have been a six-hour discussion.
Yeah.
But I spent the past few weeks going through various lists, and really what we're doing, we wanted to remove import duties and also VAT on basic food items. As I said, major aspect of the budget, major pillar, is trying to protect the most vulnerable people amongst us while improving and moving forward with our national development goals. So we would have removed VAT from basic items, but we would have added VAT to some of the luxury items. Again, you
like
see?
Like salmon and strawberries.
Correct.
I've seen that there was a legal notice actually published on the 4th, I believe. Yeah, the 4th of October.
Yes. So we're doing that because we realize that food is a huge consumer of foreign exchange. But we want, if you're going to import food, let it be basic food items at a price that the average Trinbagonian can afford. If you want to enjoy luxury items, then you should have to pay more for it. And it would reduce the demand for those items and possibly reduce the consumption of foreign exchange. So we are protecting our foreign reserves, right, while also assisting persons to afford food in this global economy that we exist in, because food prices internationally have increased due to the cost of supply, cost of shipping, supply chain issues. It has gone up globally, and the government has no control over that. So we are working to manage that with what we do have control over, which is the removal of VAT and also import duties.
But then, Mr. Mann, the removal of VAT, yeah, but what about price gouging? What about the fact that now the minister is saying that we cannot control if how supermarkets decide to monitor their prices? Is that not defeating the purpose? Because, of course, the Supermarket Association already said, don't expect this to mean that food prices will not raise with these particular zero rated.
Yes.
I mean, can we not have legislation like in the UK and other places where you have a consumer division that deals with this type of
The difficulty is
some people
have been calling for price controls.
Yes.
But price controls usually lead to a lack of supply. We saw that in Venezuela. A lot of countries, well, once you interrupt market forces, you're going to have some measure that was inadvisable,
but
something
the European
that you did
community,
not want.
And
if you check, you'll see that they have had supply issues. Also, they are part of the largest trading bloc in the world. We are not so fortunate. So it's different for us. If we implement price controls, in any community that has price controls, you will see there's always a supply issue, because you're really bringing the price below the equilibrium price. And that's what causes that.
Well, at least it's commendable that the government had considered further items. I mean, canned items are something that is used significantly, tuna, etc.
We try to shave as much cost off of those basic food items, but again, we don't have control over what's going on internationally. There's been an increase in shipping costs worldwide. There's also been an increase in the cost of food because of supply chain issues worldwide. We expect those things to really diminish over time, but we have done all that we could do to really bring food prices down to a level that allows Trinbagonians to eat, to live. Yeah,
that is a fact. Now, Mr. Manning, before I know we are soon out of time. Now, there are certain sectors in the community or in the society that felt a bit disappointed in terms of the creative sector, the sport tourism sector, well, sporting sector, etc. Now, of course, the creative industry has been hit really, really hard by this pandemic. I mean, we've had where grants has been given, but it's not significant for the type of lifestyle or for what they would have done. Because, I mean, come on. How does the government, what is the government doing to ensure that these particular sectors remain relevant and not be left on the breadline?
Well, we did do
allocation has decreased as well.
We did do a lot for SMEs, and a lot of the businesses involved in this sector would fall under the SME category. One, there's technical assistance. There's also funding for these industries, for these persons participating in this industry. We realized that there was a challenge in terms of SMEs accessing funding, which we have made available to many of the commercial banks because their housekeeping was not in order. You know, they had difficulty with audited financial statements, that sort of thing. So now we've even supplied technical support to SMEs to help them get themselves in line so that they can access government services and facilities. We hope very soon that our entertainment industry will be back up and running, but of course that depends on the level of vaccinations. And I would implore people, take this time right now, to implore everyone in Trinidad and Tobago to please get vaccinated and not listen to the ridiculous stories and conspiracy theories that are out there. Billions of people around this world have been vaccinated and they're not dying in the street from vaccine usage, but people are dying from COVID.
Yes.
Okay, so don't play with your lives. Don't play with your families and your children's lives. Get vaccinated. The faster we get to a certain level of vaccination, I believe 70%, the faster we can reopen this economy and get several of these industries back to work.
And the slogan says, vaccinate to operate. And I mean, and in this vein, of course, I know the entertainment sector is opening up in terms of the safe zones.
Yes.
The Ministry of the Attorney General, I believe, and Ministry of Health would have provided regulations for how these are operated, and it's hefty fines as well.
Hefty.
Right?
Because people's lives on the line. You know, it's not a joking matter. Sometimes you want to make light of it. But COVID is a deadly disease that has killed millions of people around the world. And it's something that we should take seriously. And I think some people are not taking it seriously enough. So, unfortunately, the government has to say, look, this is a serious issue. And if you are not vaccinated, there are certain things that you're just not going to be able to access. Because we have to be able to protect the lives of those who are vaccinated and also the lives of those that are unvaccinated.
And then we won't be able to see Mr. Manning perform his Christmas single.
Boy.
And as we're speaking about Christmas single, I said I will put you on the spot. Master Control, let's pull it up. Let's see if Mr. Manning could probably give us a little tools of his
Look
song
at
with Mr. Nigel Kutie, who is the councillor in San Fernando City Corporation, Monipo Navet. Parang 2021 Christmas Forever. Let's hear a little thing now.
So I spoke to my agent. I don't sing for free.
Oh, you don't sing for free?
No.
Come on.
Huge demand for my services now. So
we be hearing anything? I'm not sure if it played.
All right. Music.
Oh, he's not here.
Let's have a ball. Watch you play the song
while we sing along.
Sorrel in my hand
while we sing Parang.
Children laugh and sing
to the joy it brings.
Eats and drinks for soul.
Yuletide cheer, you know.
To have a Merry Christmas, a Merry Christmas is all we aim for. So call out to your neighbor,
call out to your friends.
Come, let's spend
Christmas together.
Wake up this morning, you know where we going. Victoria Village,
we parangin. Auntie in St. Joseph, don't leave home, we come in. With box bass and shack shack,
we parangin.
In Pleasantville,
keep on passing.
In in Mon Repo.
Barack we go.
St. Madeleine.
What we here for?
Yeah, no, go ahead. So this is Mr. Manning and Nigel Kutty, Nigel and Brian Christmas together, Parang 2021.
Yes.
So if you want to hear Mr. Manning, you need to vaccinate and you need to be in a safe zone. Of course, he said that is his what your manager said. You know, you can't sing with
my agent.
Your agent.
I'll give you the story. Nigel Coutier is a remarkable person from San Andreas constituency and a counselor. He had a Christmas song last year. So I called him. I said, Nigel, I need to be on your next song. Okay, I thought he meant, that I could have like an intro, say something in the intro, whatever. He said, no, don't worry. We're going to make a duet. I said, Nigel, I don't know about that.
I'm big shoot on San
Andreas. He said, don't worry. Right? Mm. So I, worked with a voice coach. Worked with a voice coach, right?
Okay.
For several hours.
Can I call him, man?
Yeah. We worked on this song, and then of course some studio magic in there too, and we made a song, and I was very impressed with the outcome.
And it's being played on Sweet 100,
which shocked us because we wanted to really bring that Christmas cheer back to the constituency.
Indeed.
So we just wanted to make a song
for
fun to bring that Christmas joy into people's hearts after a year and a half of real adversity.
Yes.
And the next thing we know, we're getting calls from radio stations, getting asked for interviews. Everybody wants a copy of the song. So,
well, I had my personal copy to my phone, as a member of San Flannery East as well, So, Mr. Manning, thank you so much. Your closing comments. I know we are out of time.
This national budget was really meant to focus on agriculture, diversification, and also protection of the most vulnerable at the same time. It has paved the road and made a path for this country coming out of this COVID crisis so that we can create jobs, create opportunities, and not leave our most vulnerable persons behind. And I'm very proud of this budget and the work that the Ministry of Finance has done, along with the Ministry of Planning, because it shows the caring of this government. It also shows our focus and emphasis on agriculture and really taking care of ourselves to reduce our food import bills.
I know
so
we
I'm
didn't
very
speak much about agriculture, but of course that's a big incentive
of
program
course,
as well
of
the
course.
Government. Thank you so much, Mr. Manning. Resilience in the face of a global pandemic. Thank you for gracing us on set, on this noble set, as I indicated
yes,
to you.
Yes.
And we do appreciate your contribution.
Thank you for
all the best,
me.
Sir.
Thank you.
All right, guys, it's a wrap. You have been watching Strictly Legal, an overview of the budget, National Budget 2022, with the Honorable Brian Manning, MP and Minister in the Ministry of Finance. Do have a great week ahead. Stay blessed. Goodbye.
We barang in there.
To have a Merry Christmas. A Merry Christmas is what we aim for.
So call out to your neighbor.
Call out to your friends.
Come, let's spend Christmas together.
Brianna, heading across to St. John.
St. Joseph Village.
No, we have to go to Mr. Bella too.
Sando East.
With that, it's a cold as San Fernando Parang with us.
We're going everywhere.